Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
CliffCentral.com.
The Leadership Platform is brought to you by Sibanye Gold, a proudly South African mining company.
I am the future of South Africa. On my shoulders, I carry the hopes and dreams of generations to come. I'm eager to learn, but even more eager to use my knowledge for good. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe our youth is worth its weight in gold, which is why we are so committed to developing, nurturing, and grooming our young people into future leaders. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
Welcome to Leadership Platform, your weekly leadership masterclass. First half hour, master lesson. Second half hour, we zoom in on our guest studio guest. For all things leadership, go to leadershipplatform.com, two P's in the middle. And there you can read a lot about leadership, a lot of content there. Our usual panel, Louis Groenewald and Rich Simmons in the studio. Hi, Rich.
Hi there.
Missed you last week, but here you are back with us. Louis Groenewald is not in the studio at the moment. He's hanging out somewhere. We'll have him in a moment. And our very special guest today is Bernard Swanepoel. He's a South African business icon. In America, we'd probably have a movie about his life if you ask me. He wouldn't like what I said, but I think it's true. In America, we know how to take leaders who create incredible movement and showcase them. So we're going to try and do a bit of that today, but have tough conversations, good conversations with Bernard Swanepoel. Welcome, Bernard.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us.
No, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Last week, we discussed the leadership miracle, an article by Professor Theo Veldsmann from UJ. And we had youth in the studio. It was a very vibrant conversation. But he believes we need a leadership miracle in the country. And that's a fantastic podcast to download, that half-hour podcast. And we actually talked to the youth in the studio. We said to them, this is the state of the country, as he believes. And we seem to agree. And then spoke about seven or eight solutions, elements that we need to bring about that leadership miracle. Fascinating conversation. Download that podcast. All right, today we're going to talk about, and as I said, in the second half we'll zoom in on Bernard Swanepoel. Bernard, who built Harmony with his team, and you left them when, Bernard?
Almost 8 years ago now.
Wow. So Graham Briggs has been the CEO for almost 8 years.
That would be so. Harmony.
That's very long these days. But you were at the helm for how long?
12 years.
12 years. All right. So he's got 4 more years.
I should have left 4 years earlier, clearly.
Well, it's good to have you in the studio. And I know you consult and you've been in the mining space a lot. So we'll get your views a little later on. The second half, we zoom in on this man. Harmony was small. It was Harmony Gold when you went in as the CEO.
Yeah, it was a typical South African gold mine, one sort of lease area. And, you know, obviously that was the phase of expansion through acquisition. My time overlapped with that period in the industry.
And you really went for it. Okay, today though, we have a message to all leaders. I want you to listen very carefully. The master lesson is about making a real impact as a leader. It could be for a CEO, okay, but it could be for you as a regional leader, as leader of one mine, a general manager or a vice president. It doesn't matter where you sit, or the general manager of a pick and pay store. It doesn't matter. But the question to you is, do you want to positively impact your organization or your people and your environment? Do you want to leave a lasting legacy? Or I'll also ask, if as a newly appointed or even experienced leader, you know that your organization is struggling to confidently stay ahead, despite the numbers seeming fine. The numbers look okay, but inside you know that you're struggling to confidently stay ahead. Or you also know that the organization needs to be taken ultimately by you to another level. Or it is simply time to bring about radical change. Firstly, consider this quote by Francis of Assisi. I don't know how you say it. A-S-S-I-S-I. Francis of Assisi. And then I'll share 6 points with you. This is what Francis said. Start by doing what's necessary. Then do what's possible. And suddenly you are doing the impossible. Now, I'm afraid, but impossible is what you and your team, especially if you're a CEO of a business, are expected to do these days. I think that's what burnout and them did. They did what they may not have felt was impossible, but they did an impossibility. Took something from small to really big in actually a limited period of time. Now, let me share the first 3 points, which I think is the foundation of 6 points for you as a leader to make a real impact. First thing, very basic. Number one, ensure you are accepted as the leader. That sounds simple. But do your organization, your people and stakeholders accept you as their leader unreservedly? Not because you hold the title, but because they know you understand a couple of things. One is the essence of why the organization exists. So if you're a new CEO, people may not accept you, trust me, until they feel you understand the essence of the business. Until they feel you understand the inherent culture of the organization, the current overall direction it is taking, the needs of the people. Do you understand the systems, procedures, and structures of the organization? And the reason you understand is because you have taken the time and continue taking the time to listen, engage, and ask questions of and at every level of the organization. So point one, ensure you are accepted as the leader. Point two, and after point three, I'll ask the panel their thoughts. Point two, you have credibility from a managerial, functional, and even technical point of view. In other words, you may understand. Okay, it's possible that you get the first box ticked. You understand. But is the business performing from a systems, procedures, policies, and technical functional angle? If so, in my view, you have managerial or management credibility. Okay, you know this part of the business and can engage your employees confidently with the right and relevant questions at any level. Point three, you have credibility as a leader. First, you know consciously how to lead, what your leadership philosophy is. If asked what it is, you can share it with confidence and clarity. In essence, you lead consciously and not by default. A lot of leaders, even at the top, lead by default. The business performs not only because it has a great product, offers relevant service, has a workable strategy, and the managerial, functional, and technical components work, but also because you lead it and its people effectively. And everyone knows one of the reasons why the organization is successful enough is because of your leadership. So there's three basics that I think must be in place if you want to leave a real impact and to take it to the next level, which I'll share in a moment. Ensure you're accepted as the leader. You have credibility from a managerial, functional, and even technical point of view. And finally, you have credibility as a leader. Bernard, your comments on any of those?
I think it sounds solid. And they're obviously very interlinked. I mean, if you don't have credibility technically, if you don't have a proven track record of sorts in terms of leadership, you make it very hard for people to accept you. So for me, there's a clear link between the three things. I'm always amazed at how corporately some of your initial credibility is almost ex officio by appointment, and that helps, but that's not good enough. That's but the starting point. I think most people say, this guy is new, this lady is new, let's give her a chance. But then you have to step up and impress people and convince people that you deserve the position. Mm. I think especially today where lots of other factors come into appointments, I think some people, you know, would get into a position and the organization would say, well, it's because she's a lady. Well, he's black. And those things all are just complicating factors, making it even tougher for what is typically a tough job, a new leadership role.
For you to be unreservedly accepted as the leader. Good point. Rich?
Yeah, it's, I think that ex officio thing that where we've arrived in this organization and suddenly, you know, often in my consulting role, I hear this word respect. And people say, they don't respect us. Mm. And I'm thinking, well, my initial knee-jerk reaction to that is if the staff don't respect you as the leaders, you don't respect the staff.
Mm.
That's pretty simple. So, you know, to be accepted as the leader, have you respected the people that are supposed to be following you then if you assume this ex officio role of the leader?
And one way to show respect is to listen.
That's right.
Especially if you're new.
Yeah.
Okay? You could be in a position for a while, Bernard, but things have been going really rough, and you could maybe lose some credibility potentially as a leader, or people don't accept you so much if you overstay your welcome, perhaps, or it could be many reasons. But if you listen to people and they feel you understand their needs, they feel you understand the essence of the business, you've stayed there long enough for a couple of months or a year to really understand this big bank that you may have taken over as a new CEO, then they will go to the next level with you. Louis?
Bernard mentioned the fact that it's definitely more complicated nowadays. There's so many other compliance factors. Bernard, our experience, having contact with hundreds of quality leaders, is the fact that it's more important nowadays. People see different to what one says as a leader. So if a leader hasn't got that sense of self-knowledge and self-confidence, it's extremely difficult getting through these phases as well. So people sense it. And it doesn't matter so much what he says. Yes, it's important, or she says. But it's something about the person's attitude, a positive attitude, understanding of essences as well. So body language is very important, I think.
But Bernard, do you think there's still CEOs who runs a fairly large organization that don't necessarily lead consciously? What I mean by that is, if I had to put them in your chair and say, share with us your essence of your leadership philosophy, how you lead, what leadership is to you, that they're not that clear about it. They're much clearer about the fact that they've been a chartered accountant all the way through, and now they're the CEO of the business, or I'm a geologist and I end up as the mining CEO. So I'm very confident talking geology or mining or this, but when I take you on another journey and I say, for the next hour we're talking leadership, do you think there's still CEOs that are not that confident when it comes to that?
Absolutely. And a few retired ones, I said to you, with sweaty hand palms, it is not typically what we do. That's not what gets us promoted to be CEOs. It's technical skills. It's decision-making ability. It is, ability or preparedness to speak publicly. I mean, it's a lot of things. And reflection and wisdom, I mean, takes time. I don't think a CEO has got time to sit and reflect enough. Now, I mean, we all read about the model where, you know, the top of the organization person should have time to reflect and think. You know, we go to Omaha to hear that from Warren Buffett, you know, but we don't do that. And quite honestly, you may get yourself fired if you, you know, close your door for 6 hours a day to think. In practice, I don't see how that will happen. So I think the wisdom of having thought about your leadership style, certainly in my life, started to emerge towards the end of my career. My formal career as a CEO of a big listed company, and in the 8 years since, I am much clearer now about what it takes to be a leader than what I was when I was an active playing leader.
That's very revealing, Rich, what we hear from someone who's achieved amazing things. Taking Harmony from, let's just quickly see. Harmony was, I know it's just on memory, when you took over, it was, what was the turnover, and then when you left?
And as miners, gold miners especially, we love to talk market cap, but in dollar terms, it was probably about a $25 or $30 million company, and at a peak about, I don't know, $5 billion. Don't ask me what it's now, because obviously that's the true legacy. So a lot of it is to do with the cycle of a commodity business, but it grew in size significantly from a few hundred thousand ounces to 3 million ounces. The part that made me feel the best was in a declining industry, we saved a significant amount of jobs. And I don't say that just glibly. I mean, we employed some 50,000 South Africans, which otherwise probably would not have been employed. And I always took some personal satisfaction out of that.
From that. But I want to not lose what we have someone saying. Yeah, Rich and Louis is a CEO, a former CEO of a large listed company, saying, I did not reflect enough and probably didn't understand my belief around leadership as well as I do now with hindsight and a few years of reflecting. Rich, Louis?
Yeah, I think that, you know, what this really highlights is Bernard looks younger than me. So, but what I'm trying to say here is that it's true. You know, if you think about going through fatherhood, when it was Father's Day yesterday, you become a good father when you're a grandfather. Okay? Because then you understand what real fathership's about, you know? Now, when you look at leaders, we want to retire them when they're 60, and if they're CEOs and we pay them too much, then we have to try to retire them when they're 55. So we retire them before they get to that leadership point. Yeah. That's the problem. So then we're expecting the guys without the wisdom to try and lead a company. They can manage well, but they haven't got the leadership skills. Those inherent, the conscious leadership skills. They, by default, they're compliance leaders, but they're not inherently emotional leaders because they just haven't got that experience and the wisdom.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. Now, let's say you've ticked these three boxes. We're talking about how do you, as a leader, make a real impact with your organization, to your people, the environment. First, ensure you are accepted as a leader. Second, you have credibility from a managerial, functional, and even technical point of view, so you understand the business. If it's banking, you understand banking. If it's mining, you understand mining. And third, you have credibility as a leader. So as a manager, as shall we say, and a leader. Now, taking it to another level. And potentially, if you take it to this level, I think you can leapfrog your organization ahead of its environment and even other players in your industry. And it's not what you necessarily think. Number four, therefore. Work tirelessly, and it speaks to what we just said, to promote leadership as every employee's first profession. Every one of your people must understand that their technical functional job is in fact their second profession. They are first and foremost a leader. That part of them that communicates, convinces, cares, persuades, shows empathy, processes and confronts obstacles, comes with solutions, makes decisive decisions, creates movement. In fact, every good part of them is their leadership part. This is the part that will differentiate them. This is the part that will add most value to their technical functional part, their second profession. Junior and senior leaders must come to realize that their first profession is leadership, that the responsibility of leadership is not bound to title or position. So when that awakens in 40,000 employees or 5,000 or 2,000 or 60, like our previous guest, we're saying you're taking your organization to another level. Number five, and I'll get your comments now, is now you have to take first profession leadership to a level required by the environment. In today's highly competitive environment that is unprecedented, not only should individuals see themselves as leaders first, but they have to adopt a certain leadership philosophy. And we call this seamless leadership. What is that? Impossibility thinking and doing. No boundaries attitude. Complexity management. The ability to simplify. And essence, big picture, universal thinking. You and your team will have to set the tone and standard here. The fact, and let me say this boldly, the fact that your team members have been on many leadership programs over the years does not mean they can think and act like what I'm saying right now. It takes time, practice, humility, and courage to shift from an everyday leadership attitude to a seamless leadership attitude. All right, so point four is work tirelessly to promote leadership as every employee's first profession. Point five, take first profession leadership to a level required by the environment. And finally, number six, and this is very important, I think. Ensure your leaders are leadership fit, that they remain leadership fit. You and they should not only be technically functionally fit, that means competent and current, but also leadership fit. And that means competent and confident to lead or move their respective area and people towards that extraordinary, the perceived impossible. Leadership fit means you take leadership development to a whole new dimension at every level of your organization. It means you not only send your leaders on ad hoc leadership programs, but that leadership conversations become part and parcel of your organizational culture. As much as technical functional conversations are held in the business, leadership conversations happen concurrently and they are level appropriate. For example, when a CEO sits down with one of his or her executives for feedback on her functional area, let's say, at that level, most of the conversation is around leadership because 80% of her job is about leadership. And I think most CEOs don't do that. Managers across the organization hold not only one-on-one functional conversations with their reports, but also leadership conversations. Leaders regularly study up on leadership and discuss and debate with one another. KPIs measure leadership competency directly rather than functional performance only. In short, leadership study, thinking, discussing, and behavior are daily habits rather than an ad hoc occurrence. Leadership development, and this happens very few places, matches or exceeds technical development because it is core to your culture. Now, if as a leader you can tick these six boxes, chances are your people and organization is match fit for the current environment. In fact, You may even have leapfrogged your environment and be ahead of it and other players in your industry. If you can achieve all 6 points above, you may very well have created a lasting success culture. I call it a self-perpetuating seamless leadership culture that mutates the organization into whatever it needs in order to stay ahead in an unpredictable, ever-changing world. Comments. Who wants to go first? Bernard.
I agree. If you achieve that, I can't sit here and think of many a company I would say are even endeavoring to achieve that, and I'm not unnecessarily cynical. I think for me the two obvious metrics I would have looked at as an outsider is I would have said, well, you know, show me your hierarchy, because obviously if leadership has really been made an integral part of an organization, it would automatically result in something else driving your hierarchy. You know, and after two or three levels, you're going to run out of reasons for hierarchy. And I would obviously also ask, show me your incentive scheme, you know, your reward scheme, because if that is set by fund managers in New York, as important as they are, they don't particularly care for specific management or leadership style. They care for shorter term quarterly results. And a lot goes wrong in those two sort of areas. So I think in time we will find organizations, and I'm sure in the smaller family business, startup space, I think we find them until they corporatize or until they systemize or until they bring in professional managers, obviously not leaders. So those 6 points would make for a special environment.
And as I said, it'll help the organization mutate consistently into what it needs, because you've got a leadership culture on all levels. And by this, technical and functional is a given in this instance. I mean, never before, people need to be technically and functionally equipped. But that's now a given. People, we're trying to awaken that realization that your first profession is leadership. Louis, and then Rich?
Well, the cycle that Bernard has gone through, when he mentions about the older he gets, the more he learns what wisdom's really about. You actually need that to drive that culture. But you start off where that is not the CEO's ability to do so. So when, in that sense, it needs a kind of mentorship or awareness. That's why we use the term, but not first profession awareness, to realize it's a priority, not a nice to have. It's not a soft skill anymore. It's the real skill. But the problem is you need somebody like a Bernard with that kind of conviction to say, people, it works. I have confidence that if you have got a leadership attitude, that things will happen that are impossible. And it's very exciting, but it can be done. But not many organizations succeed necessarily.
But yeah, Bernard's sitting here with hindsight, and we'll see what he's learned over the years. You know, it's nice to sit where he sits. If you're now running a large retail company, I mean, you're in it. You know, do you have time to? And that's why we have these conversations, is to pull the leaders away from there and talk at another level. Rich?
Yeah, so I'll agree that if you can get these 6 points right, you're fantastic. But, you know, to simplify this whole thing, you look at these 6 points and you look, this is exactly what you'd want in a good relationship as well.
I haven't thought of it that way.
Okay.
Help us.
Yeah. So, you know, we spoke about the first one, being accepted. So if you're going to look at this as relationship, being accepted as the partner.
Yeah.
The partner of choice. Okay? Because that's, as a leader, you want to be the partner of choice to that person. Otherwise, if you're not the partner of choice, you're not their leader.
Yeah.
Right. When it comes to your credibility, are you able to manage this relationship?
Yeah.
Can you keep it together?
Practically and otherwise, yeah.
You know? And then are you consciously in this relationship, or are you just there by default because you've got a ring on your finger type of thing? You know, you're really there.
Or because you have an employment contract.
Yeah, you've got a marriage contract. You know, that's not even an agreement. That's just a contract. So then, you know, work tirelessly in that relationship. Okay? Everyone, if you look at, you know, so it's, you can look at it in the big scale of many, many employees or just the two of you. So between you and the person that's you, you both need to see yourself as part of the deal.
Yeah.
And work tirelessly on that deal.
Yeah.
Okay. And then when it comes to the highly competitive, you know, and this is probably where our biggest problem with leadership sits at the moment, is that the leader, you would look after your partner. You would make sure that they're always safe and that they feel happy and secure in that relationship because they know that you've got their back. When you don't have their back, it's not worth them being in the relationship. If the leader is only there for himself and not for the people he's leading, he hasn't got their back.
And they know it.
And they know it.
Yeah.
So then they're 60% less productive. So they're only 40% productive. And then, I mean, you look at the leadership fit thing. Are you having conversations about how you can improve this relationship?
Keep the relationship fit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so this, okay, these six things are all about relationship.
One-on-one relationships, personal, in business, and then we're saying, all right, so if you want to make a real impact as a leader, yeah, we can put lots of technical things in there. We really can, and we can bore you with a great amount of things. But in essence, let me summarize. If you really want to make a difference, 6 points. One, ensure you are accepted as the leader. It doesn't happen by default. Number two, you have credibility. Make sure you have credibility from a managerial, functional, and even technical point of view. So you understand the business and people know it. Number three, you have credibility as a leader. And that's a little bit different. Number four, work tirelessly to promote leadership as every employee's first profession. Number five, take first profession leadership to the level required by the environment. We say that's seamless leadership. And number six, ensure your leaders are leadership fit. Okay, that's the master lesson today. Two or three tweets that I found interesting. It was Father's Day yesterday. So, obviously, you know, one that I sent that went everywhere, which is fantastic, and Tuli Madonsela sent it herself as well, was the most important leadership positions are those you are never released from. We have Bernard in the studio. He was the CEO of Harmony Gold, a powerful man, influential, wonderful, and then he left. Okay, but you remain a father. For life, okay, yep. And a mother, a grandfather, grandmother. Those are the most important leadership positions. A very powerful one by Terry Falkvane, the CEO of Prime Media Broadcast, and she says values are important. And to her, a value is not a value unless you are willing to lose money over it. And then another one, last one. As a CEO, my job is to make the world a better place. Mark Kutafani, appropriate today with a mining leader. And yeah, as a CEO, my job is to make the world a better place. Next up, we're going to reminisce, go into the past, learn from Bernard Swanepoel, who's already revealed a couple of interesting points here and learning from his past. We're going to look at what he did at Harmony and after, post-Harmony. He's still very influential in the mining environment. He's an icon in South Africa in the business environment. He did so much, and the legacy still goes. Difficult, but it still goes. Harmony Gold, stay with us.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. Which is why we have partnered with the Leadership Platform to nurture leaders who are committed to growing our country's economy.
We are proud to say it's an initiative that's already showing glittering results. Sibanye Gold, we are one.